Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with more evidence that the wrong people are on trial for the Iraq War and that Paul Wolfowitz, not Bradley Manning, should be in the dock. A 17-year veteran of the CIA, Phil Giraldi, joins us to discuss the latest scandal he has uncovered about how the neocons were conned and Iran played Uncle Sam for Uncle Sucker. Phil Giraldi's latest article at the American Conservative is Paul Wolfowitz's Iran Connection: Was the Architect of the Iraq War Getting Advice from an Agent of the Islamic Republic? Then, with the president's announcement today that he is appointing Susan Rice to be his next national security advisor and that she will be replaced as U.S. ambassador to the UN by Samantha Power, we will speak with David Rothkopf, the CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine and author of Running the World, the Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. We'll discuss Obama's defiance of his Republican critics who have trumped up charges against Susan Rice over the phony Benghazi scandal and assess what changes she will bring to U.S. foreign policy. Then finally, an important member of the Syrian opposition, Radwan Ziyadeh, joins us to discuss the loss of a key strategic town to Hezbollah and what that means for the Free Syrian Army in their long struggle to defeat the Assad regime, whose fight for survival appears to be improving as the tide of battle turns in their favor. We will also discuss the difference between Assad's backers, Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, and the lack of support the outgunned rebels are getting from the U.S. and the EU. And joining us now is Philip Giraldi, who for 17 years was a CIA operations officer specializing in counterterrorism throughout Europe and the Middle East. He now works in the private sector doing security consulting and writes a column in the American Conservative on international security issues. His latest article at the American Conservative is Paul Wolfowitz's Iran Connection: Was the Architect of the Iraq War Getting Advice from an Agent of the Islamic Republic? Welcome to Background Briefing, Phil Giraldi.
Well, thank you for having me on again.
And this latest news from you, Phil, comes on top of what has been probably one of the greatest penetrations of American foreign policy and intelligence at the highest level by Ahmad Chalabi, who was the darling of the neocons and in many ways, along with Wolfowitz and company, was the architect of the Iraq War in terms of beguiling the American side into believing that Chalabi would be the kind of Nelson Mandela of the new Iraq after Saddam was toppled. And turned out all along, Chalabi was working with the Iranians, and apparently the National Security Agency finally told George W. Bush, the president, that Chalabi had told the Iranians that the NSA had broken Iran's diplomatic code. And Bush was so furious that he ordered the Pentagon to cut all ties. And even then, the Pentagon, under Doug Feith, slow-walked Bush's orders and made him even more furious. So there's a whole story there, is there not?
Yeah, there is. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of finagling going on in the lead-up to the Iraq War, but Chalabi has to win the prize as the ultimate finagler, I think. He essentially was producing intelligence that was completely fraudulent about the capabilities of Saddam Hussein's Iraq, because obviously the key to this was to pretend that there was some kind of threat emanating from Iraq against the United States. And at the same time, he clearly was playing every side. He no doubt had his own constituencies inside Iraq. He was hoping to become either prime minister or president of the country. And he was also colluding with the Iranians. He was passing not only assessments to, like the one you cited, showing that we had been breaking their diplomatic code, but he also was passing hard intelligence, actual reports, which his contacts in the Pentagon were giving to him. So the whole story is quite incredible.
Well, of course, you know, he has not, I guess he's beyond the grasp of American law, but Wolfowitz and Feith and company have never been put on trial, have they? I mean, that we've got Bradley Manning on trial now, but the real architects of this catastrophe have not only gone free, they still are listened to by the press. And in many ways, the usual suspects who brought us the Iraq disaster are now trying to get us into a war with Syria.
Yeah, it's exactly the same players. Wolfowitz is at the now at the American Enterprise Institute, where he has a senior position. That's after he lost his job at the World Bank as president through some indiscretions. And yeah, these guys never go away. That's part of the problem. But the legal issue is that you would have to prove that they actually knew what they were doing when they possibly colluded at starting a war. That's a little bit hard to prove. And we can cite a lot of examples of where they were pushing intelligence through the system, but they would claim if they were in a courtroom that they believed this stuff to be true.
Well, as you probably know, Phil, I was following up on the story of who forged the Niger documents, which I think is key to the whole story about Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame. And curiously enough, that was never really pushed by the mainstream press. It seemed to me to be really germane to the whole idea of one of the main pieces of evidence that, or alleged evidence that got us into the Iraq War, was this idea that Saddam was trying to buy uranium from Niger. And in an interview with a former senior CIA officer who mentioned that the documents were forged over here, I suggested that perhaps Michael Ledeen, who had been involved with Italian intelligence, I believe, forging documents to incriminate Jimmy Carter's brother, might have had a hand in this. And Ledeen came after me immediately. So to my mind, when you say you couldn't put him on trial because of essentially they could be guilty of stupidity but not mendacity, surely forging documents to get us into a war is mendacity.
Well, it surely is, and certainly in the case of the Niger documents, there's no question about that. But the ultimate question becomes who forged them. Like Wolfowitz will always claim, or Feith will claim, that the documents that were given them by Chalabi, they accepted in good faith and believed that they were accurate. And obviously, if any of them were tried for the Niger forgeries, it would be the same argument. You'd have to actually get the guy who did the forgery and get him to appear in court and say, you know, I did it, and then I passed it to so-and-so, and they knew they were fake. But, of course, that's a tough hurdle to get over.
Again, I'm speaking with Phil Giraldi, who for 17 years was a CIA operations officer specializing in counterterrorism throughout Europe and the Middle East. He now works in the private sector doing security consulting and writes a column in the American Conservative on international security issues. His latest article at the American Conservative is Paul Wolfowitz's Iran Connection: Was the Architect of the Iraq War Getting Advice from an Agent of the Islamic Republic? Let's now talk about that. I just brought up Chalabi because that was bad enough. But now you're bringing to the table this other aspect of how the neocons got conned. And in this case, this Iraqi doctor who organized a group of Iraqis that Paul Wolfowitz met with regularly in late 2002 and early 2003, he met secretly with this group of Iraqi expatriates led by this doctor. So take us from there, the extraordinary story of Dr. Ali Al-Attar.
Yeah, well, it appears that Wolfowitz decided that he needed his own independent sources of information on what was going on inside Iraq. So he, through means that I don't know exactly how he got in touch with these people, but he wound up getting in touch with a group headed by one Dr. Ali Al-Attar, who was practicing medicine in Virginia and Maryland at the time. And Wolfowitz would meet with Al-Attar and a number of other Iraqi expats, and he would get their assessments on the situation in Iraq, and they basically gave him information that suggested that the American troops would be greeted with shouts of joy, with flowers, you know, the usual sorts of arguments. And Wolfowitz apparently was somewhat taken in by this. When it didn't turn out that way, Wolfowitz called this group in again and very angrily confronted them and said, why were you wrong? He wasn't wrong, of course, but why were you wrong? And they told him basically that they didn't know, but that the Americans had behaved very brutally upon arrival in Iraq and had alienated a lot of public opinion. So that's the story, but the backstory is the interesting part. This Iraqi doctor, it turns out, was simultaneously engaged in all kinds of fraud. He was being investigated by the IRS. He was being investigated by the FBI. He was he was kicked out of the medical profession by the authorities in Maryland. And it appears that Wolfowitz didn't know any of this. The guy fled the country, fled the United States when he was about to be arrested, wound up in Beirut, and it turns out that there's yet another story there. This guy was seen on the street in Beirut with Hezbollah people, and furthermore, the guy himself, though born in Iraq, is an Iranian. He's born of an Iranian mother and father. So it throws an interesting wrinkle into what might have been happening and who might have been conning whom in the lead-up to the Iraq War.
So if you combine the story of Dr. Ali Al-Attar, who it appears was an Iranian agent all along, and Ahmad Chalabi, who appears that he was an Iranian agent all along, Phil Giraldi, then you have to ask yourself, what were the Iranians doing in manipulating the United States? Did they want them, basically? Is Uncle Sam, Uncle Sucker here, that the Iranians wanted us to come in there, knock off Saddam Hussein, and then know that we would just open up a hornet's nest and eventually get driven out of there, and they'd end up owning the country, which is the current situation?
Yeah, that's basically the current situation. I don't know if they were looking that far ahead, but certainly Saddam Hussein was their enemy, and he had a very relative to the region he was in, a relatively strong military force, still quite capable of confronting a country like Iran. And so it was completely in the Iranian interest to have the United States go in there and destroy this guy, with the expectation that the result of that would be a government that would be dominated by the Shia majority in Iran, which would inevitably be a lot friendlier towards Iran.
So from your understanding about all the pre-Iraq war intelligence and how much it was stovepiped and cooked by the neocons, have you ever come across any evidence of anybody telling, and George Bush apparently met regularly in the White House with the kind of people that we're talking about, and he was regularly briefed by these experts, so-called experts from the American Enterprise Institute and other neoconservative think tanks. My understanding of government, and particularly the National Security Council, is on pretty much every National Security Council, including even the Reagan administration, which was often accused of being too ideological, there were dissenting voices that they allowed for a broad array of input and didn't just rely on a small cadre of like-minded people. So have you ever found any evidence that there was anybody inside that government that ever said, wait a minute, this is a bad idea?
Yeah. Well, the only evidence of that would have to be the few State Department officers that resigned in protest to the development of the argument for the war with Iraq. I think it is correct to say at the time of the Bush administration, there was no institutional pushback. There was no capability of anybody arguing against whatever had been decided to be the policy line. So that's what we saw. And plus, Bush was, you know, he was basically, it was clear, I know from my time at CIA when all this was going on, it was clear that Cheney and Bush wanted certain types of information that basically implicated Iran and created Iraq and created a casus belli, a reason for war. And it was clear that that's what they were wanted. So that went all the way down the pipeline, and everybody who cared about their jobs had to be aware of that. And also, of course, they were getting this this nonsense from groups like the American Enterprise Institute, which would send its experts over, and they would brief them. They'd say the same thing. So all they were hearing was basically that Iraq was, for any number of reasons, a threat against the United States and had to be dealt with.
But how do you explain the actions of the director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet? He is supposed to be the number one intelligence officer in the country. And he, as we know, had Colin Powell and Colonel Wilkerson outside in the conference room on the seventh floor there for a couple of days going over all of the intelligence ahead of Powell's famous speech at the United Nations, which became the kind of final nail in the coffin, if it will, of the U.S.'s determination to go to war, and then he made the case in front of the world that turned out to be almost entirely bogus. There were some people in the agency that I've spoken to, like Tyler Drumheller and others, who kept saying, you know, this guy Curveball, this fellow that the Germans have, is completely unreliable, and all of his intelligence, which Powell presented to the UN, was bogus. So what explains, why did Tenet sell the war and effectively hung Powell out to dry? And to this day, Powell and Wilkerson regret what they did.
Well, Powell knew that he was lying. I don't know what the story is on Tenet, to be honest. I suspect Tenet was just an extremely ambitious guy who knew what the White House wanted and was willing to provide the intelligence to say that. I suspect that's what it is. Tenet, as far as I'm concerned, had no moral integrity whatsoever in this whole lead-up to the war. He was basically a yes man for Dick Cheney, essentially, in the White House. So, I don't know what was going through Tenet's head, but there certainly were a lot of people at CIA. I used to hear them myself and talk to them myself, who said, you know, there's no real intelligence suggesting that Iraq is in any way a threat to the United States. I heard a lot of that in 2002. And basically, everybody kind of knew it. And Colin Powell, after going through the intelligence, knew it. But everybody was a good team player on this, and they gave George Bush what he wanted.
Well, as far as I know, on the record, the only person who ever spoke out against this monstrous folly was the former National Security Advisor under Bush Sr., Brent Scowcroft, who wrote an op-ed, and then he got pretty much frozen out. And it leads you to ask the question, is, you know, presumably Bush's own father, who's close to Scowcroft, shared Scowcroft's skepticism about this misadventure. Yet he did not, the father never told the son about his presumable qualms about what the son was doing.
Well, apparently the son never spoke to the father about it. I think that's a more accurate version, that he should have talked to his father, but he didn't. He ruled that out, and he refused to talk to his father in the lead up to the war. I think the elder Bush had a whole lot more sense than the younger Bush, and he certainly might have been able to influence the argument, but there was no argument because Bush Jr. wouldn't talk to him.
And on the other side, in terms of our loyal opposition in this so-called democracy that we have, Phil Giraldi, you know, I've spoken to Senator Bob Graham, who was chair of the Intelligence Committee at the time, and he told me that the White House was going to go ahead and invade Iraq without an NIE, without a national intelligence estimate, and that Senator Graham and the Intelligence Committee insisted on one being provided, and even the one that was provided that was doctored by the neocons in the Pentagon was, if you actually read the damn thing, it made it pretty clear that there wasn't a case for war. And it's interesting that almost all of the senators on the Intelligence Committee, with the exception of Dianne Feinstein and John Edwards, voted against the war. And yet prominent Democrats like Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, who presumably had the same information, voted for it. So our loyal opposition clearly failed us. Not only that, of course, the press failed us too by getting on the war bandwagon.
Yeah, well, I've spoken to congressmen subsequently after the war was started and was going badly, and they were kind of coming to me and saying, well, why is this happening? And I said, well, you know, everyone in the intelligence agencies knew this was essentially a fake. And the congressman would say to me, yeah, but we didn't know that. I think there were a lot of people who were very poorly informed in the lead up to the war. Congressmen aren't necessarily any smarter than the rest of us. In fact, they may go the other way. But the fact is that they seem to have been, as a group, very, very poorly informed. They would be given briefings by the White House or briefings by committee members and things like that. But in general, they really didn't know a whole lot about what was going on. And they basically bought into the argument that that was being propagated by the administration, which is that there was an existential threat against the United States and it had to be dealt with.
Well, just in closing, Phil Giraldi, since you've brought us this new information in American Conservative, Paul Wolfowitz's Iran connection, was the architect of the Iraq War, getting advice from an agent of the Islamic Republic. Again, the uber neocon got conned, and the country, as I mentioned, Uncle Sam ends up as Uncle Sucker here. And the Iranians win the Iraq war, and China wins the oil, which is what we just learned recently from page story in the New York Times. What is our takeaway? What are you hoping that the public learns from your article revealing yet another reason for the disaster?
Well, the bigger story is that these guys in Washington don't necessarily know anything more than we do. They make bad decisions. They essentially get wrong information and choose to believe it for one reason or another. And we should bear this in mind as we look ahead. And people should be thinking this very sort of thing as they think about the possibility of intervention in Syria or the possibility of a war down the road with Iran. They should begin to question what they're being fed and ask, you know, what is the real source of this kind of information? How reliable is it? Is there any possibility that somebody is feeding us something that they want us to believe? And I think the example of the Iraq war should be a lesson to all of us.
Well, Phil Giraldi, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
All right, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Phil Giraldi, who for 17 years was a CIA operations officer specializing in counterterrorism throughout Europe and the Middle East. He now works in the private sector doing security consulting and writes a column in the American Conservative on international security issues. His latest article at the American Conservative is Paul Wolfowitz's Iran Connection, Was the Architect of the Iraq War Getting Advice from an Agent of the Islamic Republic? We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the president's announcement today that Susan Rice will be the next national security advisor and Samantha Power will be the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.